Welcome to Question War, Organizing Resistance. This is July 14th. This is the beginning of the second hour, and I am speaking with Michael Andreg, who was on in the first hour, who is the author of On the Causes of War, and Rethinking 9/11 is Truth and Reconciliation Preferable to Global War. And I want to talk to you about that, Michael.
Sure.
This whole idea of truth and reconciliation, if we can have hearings for impeachment, if we can bring these things up, if the truth does come out, you mentioned South Africa as a model. Do you think this is something that is doable in the United States? Could we lure people to speak the truth about this by offering immunity?
The odds of doing any of these things are slim, all right? However, I would encourage all of them as possibilities. Impeachment is the best because you'd have this thorough public trial and thorough dissection of what happened. But there's all the other possibilities. And in terms of the truth and reconciliation thing, I'm just pointing out that it's a model that hasn't been thought about a whole lot by people, especially in America. But also, I personally, to illustrate it, I'd say Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, whoever else was behind the back of this thing, I would forgive you all. I'd say take your hundreds of millions of dollars and retire. We'll give you a medal for the best special operation of all time if you'll tell us exactly how you did it, if you'll confess. That's the model of the truth and reconciliation process, is you got amnesty if you confessed the crimes you committed for the state and said in detail what you did, who you murdered and why and so forth. Then you would get amnesty for those crimes in South Africa. And it was done to prevent a bloodbath of retribution for all that stuff. And would I trade that for backing off of the global war and dealing with the world as it really is, rather than according to this myth that was promoted by 9/11 deliberately in order to drive war with Islamic fundamentalism for the next 30 or 40 years? That's why they did it, I think. I hate to put it that coldly. And I think the country would be better off knowing what actually happened, so I would be glad to tell them, you get out of jail free. Here, have a get out of jail free card and keep all your money. And have an award that you did the best special operation of all time if you'll tell us exactly what actually happened so we can have a decent future for all of our children. Do you see my point?
I do. I know that part of me agrees with you and part of me says, no, we should.
Right, we should hit them with a club. That's the natural human instinct. They did wrong. We should punish them. And that's what we're all taught to do, and that is appropriate sometimes. But I'd say in this case, I would cheerfully forego the punishment in return for the truth.
I understand that, and I would say that if we could spare perhaps billions of lives, it definitely makes a whole lot of sense, even economically.
But it's a novel thought, and I grant you most people don't warm up to it. They go, let's hit Michael with a stick.
and
a few times.
Before I did 9/11, 9/11 was actually a much easier issue, I must admit, than I was working on global economics and changing the monetary system. And
yes, well, that's another thing that's going to be hard to change.
But that's very, very challenging to get people to understand how the monetary system doesn't work.
It takes years of educational campaigns with thousands and thousands of things.
It's very, very difficult. But I did learn that the heart of our global economy is a war economy.
And yeah, we have to change that.
And I mean, that's one reason I took on 9/11 is I thought if we... in order to change the global economy, you really have to change the belief system of the world. And 9/11 was a way of people to change their
beliefs. It is a major key to changing paradigms of belief. And it will be for decades to come, Carol. So feel that you're working in fertile ground, even though it's frustrating. Because you'll be waking people up for many years.
But you see that when 9/11 happened... the clear beneficiaries were the warmongers, and the people in the key positions got increased
hundreds
budget,
of millions of billions of dollars in new money,
and
right?
Particularly the weapons industry,
right?
And not only that, I've been getting emails.
Interesting how they bought the media, right? So that the people don't realize that what you just said, that the weapons
right.
industry was the primary immediate beneficiary.
But even worse than that, I think, is the surveillance industry. And I get emails like, oh, if you want to sell surveillance equipment, the United States actually isn't being hit as badly as the rest of the world. The rest of the world is the largest market for the surveillance equipment, which is incredibly intense.
Well,
and I think it is done to intimidate and to crush dissent and to... What I
so
see
we've got
is
a lot to work on.
Right, but it is this paradigm of fear versus
right.
the paradigm of courage. And I see that with when you looked at the cults and these intelligence agencies and how they create this sort of fake community, an inner group,
right.
and this climate of fear. So people are very much afraid of speaking out anything contradictory to the sort of the group think.
Well, let me encourage what you just said three times over. Seriously, this idea of a culture of courage rather than of fear, you cannot repeat that too often, because the more you can encourage people to feel their power, you are right, they will be able to express it, and we can overcome all these dark forces. And that's not technical. It doesn't require PhDs or thousands of dollars to get that basic message out, which you do extremely well.
Oh.
So I encourage it.
Well, I do know there's a guy out here, Jeremy Began. Actually, he wrote a book, Fighting for God, Gold, Oil, and Drugs, and it was actually
a little twist on it.
it's a very deep, heavy book. Looking at the history, but he also said that you know it doesn't require a great intellect to fathom these things. The real thing is courage.
Right, it takes courage.
And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to get it. But you have to have courage, and this is,
and
this
that
is what we run up against with everyday people. There's people who have spirit and courage who can grasp it instantly, and then there's fearful people.
Right, and others that are in the middle who get it, but the next step is this immediate realization, well, if we want to solve that problem, geez, that is a huge problem. We're not going to be able to solve that problem, you know, in the next 10 minutes. And so you turn to something solvable rather than that problem. You know that problem?
Yeah.
You've seen it a few thousand times. But I'm just pointing out that that's part of the problem that we face in America is people's instinctive revulsion against or reaction against such a huge chore to fundamentally reorient the government. But now, are we going to have a chance to do that here with the new Obama enthusiasm? Are you completely cynical that change is impossible through normal politics, or are we going to have a chance with the new president?
Oh, well, actually, the Green Party convention, unbeknownst to you, was held this last weekend.
Okay, so Cynthia McKinney was out there pressing
right.
her. Was she there? Okay, good.
Oh, yeah, she got the nomination on the first go, and it's actually been out in the media.
She's quite an exciting person to watch and listen to.
She has been, of course, thoroughly skewered and trashed by the mainstream media and the Democrats, and she probably won her election or her re-election for Congress
in Georgia
because of the electronic voting machines. They denied her that because
she stole
such a courageous voice.
She's a straightforward. She'd be a pain in anybody's organization.
Yeah, if you listen to her acceptance speech, it's very powerful, and her family really knows how the Democrats and the Republicans work. And I think what she is trying for is to build a movement and create a strong third party, which really sort of doesn't exist right now. I mean, the
no, and the odds are so heavily stacked. Boy, they've got arrows and slings and boulders waiting for that third party to come up this ramp.
Right. But I think that's what is required.
I think
people realize that if we don't have to be convinced like 50% of the population, but if we have a solid 5%. If we have a courageous,
more power to you. I don't want
vocal,
to run down.
Strong 5%. Right. We can change everything.
I voted for Ralph Nader and Winona LaDuke on the first round, not the second round. And I'll spare you. I've always been very fond of good third parties, and I've spent great effort losing with them at various times of my life.
But they can cast light on things, and
they certainly can.
That the cover up.
And I've been urging and encouraging support of the environmental issue all these years since I left medical genetics in 77. That's been life and death, too, and is just the light bulbs just going on in the public over the last two or three years with Al Gore's Academy Award-winning slideshow and all the work of two generations of scientists before them, you know, calling attention to global warming and all that. So anyway, I'm back to proselytizing for having some hope and applying oneself to any aspect of this problem, whether it's political or energy, environment. They can all use courageous efforts of people who are not cowed by the oil companies and the other big powers that are still out there going, no, don't go working over here.
Well, my hope is that the Obama supporters, the blind ones, will realize that he represents false change and McKinney represents real change, and that we will wake them up, as well as the people who haven't voted, because there's been nobody to vote for.
Right.
So, all we have to do, if people actually voted in accordance with their values and had... were literate and informed about what the
choices. If people were literate and informed, you are such a dreamer, Carol. But that's all right. Be a dreamer. By the way, we're going to have instant runoff voting in Minneapolis and St. Paul the next election, which is kind of a cool step forward and will be very helpful. For sure in Minneapolis, because they've already voted on it for the 2009 election. In St. Paul, it's up for a citizen's ballot in referendum in the current election in 2008. So they got it on the ballot, and I'm presuming that the good citizens of St. Paul will approve an experiment in instant runoff voting for the next election.
I just hope that they're not using black boxes that can be tampered with.
No. They'll be very skeptical. We use actually optical character readers on a paper, a big paper ballot. And so the machine hangs on to all the paper ballots, but it reads them optically, so it gets the high speed, and we get instant results, or fast results. But they have a solid paper. It's almost a cardboard paper trail, because they're not, they're stiff.
Oh, good.
We're old-fashioned in Minnesota. We like our paper, our wood products. We're like little beavers. In the winter, we might have a little fiber nearby.
Well, that's good, because I know the paradigm that we're up against is one of, you know, fear, cynicism, apathy. If we can get people to feel that they have power to exercise it.
And really dwell on that, because, you know, seriously, more people are moved by the affect, by the emotion. And if you can get at that fear, cynicism, apathy, and get them to believe that their little thing can help, and getting truth out about 9/11 is cathartic, and it is catalytic in terms of waking people up. Oh, my God, if they lied to us about that, what else might be an illusion? And as it turns out, one of the lessons all the spies agree with is what you see, it ain't all real. You know, a lot of that was manufactured to get you all to be compliant cows with your heads in the trough. And you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And I wanted to ask you, too, about the cover story. I know one of the fingerprints of a special operation is a cover story, which goes out widely.
In terms of the 9/11 thing?
Well, yeah, but it's not just 9/11. I mean, for all special operations, there's usually a cover story that's ready to go out.
Right. Well, if you intend to be discovered, there are covert operations where there's never any intention ever of being discovered, and then they don't have a pre-planned cover story. Go ahead.
We have a break now. We'll have to come back.
We'll come back with technical special ops after these commercials. All right. So now it's up to us to bring it back.
Chemtrails in the air, genetically modified clone processed food, poison water, radiation, and stress have reduced many of you into toxic cyber blobs. You can't go on like this, and I know you don't want to. Do yourself a favor, do your country a favor, be the best you can be, and start taking Enerfood now. Enerfood is easy to prepare and cheaper than a cup of coffee to take every day. And speaking of coffee, Enerfood.com has the best all-organic fresh coffee ever. It's fair trade coffee infused with rainforest polysaccharides to, like Enerfood, improve your immune system and not destroy it. If coffee's not your thing, try the all-organic Coco Mojo. Enerfood is spelled E-N-E-R, Enerfood.com, or give them a call at 866-762-9238. Mention WTPRN and save 10%. Try Enerfood because you can't be awake when you're always falling asleep.
It's time to think outside the box with your host, Alex Anzuri, from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Central every Saturday right here on We the People Radio Network.
Well, hello, George. Yeah, the framers of our Constitution, fresh on the heels of the revolution. But they must have seen the writing on the wall. They secured for us an open door in Article 2 in Section 4 to commence a presidential overhaul. Now we've run this play a few times before with presidents and judges and governors. And now we see that our country is in distress, with thousands dying, Bush go lying, illegal torture, illegal spies. This is so much bigger than the stain on an intern's dress. I-M-P-E-A-C-H, seven little letters gonna set us straight. I-M-P-E-A-C-H, how much more are we gonna take? I-M-P-E-A-C-H, time to clean the White House out.
Hello, welcome back to Pushing War, Organizing Resistance. I'm Carol, speaking with Michael Andreg. And Michael, I wanted to ask you about propaganda and television and how they have these tremendous resources to target, like, little kids. And somebody was telling me that they have Join the Navy commercials, even for children's cartoons these days. So they're getting kids at these very young ages to see all sorts of violent stuff and to encourage them to join the military, and they're very heavily...
Well, on the YMCA or the Chamber of Commerce, they're out there trying to get older organizations that have a brain and look at young people as a resource. And so my only point I'm saying to you is that all of them are in various ways trying to get at the young people, including the Navy and others.
Right.
That's reality out there, and it's challenging. Actually, can I mention quickly where to get my book and our DVD, just how to watch it for free. You can read them for free at gzmn.org. And that's our nonprofit where we put those things. Like you put out a radio program once a week for 2 hours out of the goodness of your soul, right? You're not getting paid to do this. Anyway, we stash our stuff on at gzmn.org for Ground Zero Minnesota. And that is part of the hope of the future, is all of these independent media efforts to get important truths out that are not represented by the major media. And your friend Phillips over in Project Censored in Sonoma State, you, is another example of a great institution that if the Republic's going to be saved, it's going to be saved by people like you and We the People Radio Network and so forth. But I don't think they're going to impeach him next week, even though we'd like them to do that. I don't think that's the way it's going to actually work out. Which way should we go? We'll keep working on impeachment, but
I think this culture of the warrior that you talk about in your book, you mentioned that, and I have to say, my husband and my kids have just taken up Aikido. And
Aikido, martial art, soft martial art.
But there is this, you know, one of the great myths.
Your kids are big athletic 19-20-year-old men, right?
Well, I got the 19-year-old, the 17-year-old, and the 14-year-old.
Okay,
and
they've got a range.
And the 14-year-old are doing the Aikido now.
Okay.
But I also posted my response to Sun Tzu's The Art of War, The Art of Life on my website. Because I think
that's quite the classic, you know. I'm glad you're replying to Sun Tzu.
But The Art of War, it basically says the art of war is the art of deception, and I think it's the self-deception of the rulers more than anything else because
The rulers are a big problem in war. But go ahead.
But I
have a vote for Sun Tzu. Sun Tzu knows that he really understood war at a level way beyond most people.
Yeah, and he also talks about the importance of spies.
Chapter 13, his last chapter is all about spies.
Right,
and you also
talk about the warrior culture, and I know in Campbell's work on myths, you know, there's the different archetypes, and you say you're never going to get rid of the warrior, and we need warriors.
Not anytime soon. No.
The warriors need to be protecting people. They shouldn't be mercenaries who are preying upon people and working for tyrants.
You say it beautifully. That is exactly the main point, to be repeated despite all the 100 other things they're going to say. That's the main point, what you just said. They are supposed to be protecting people. But anyway, tactically, my point, just to press it again, is I find warriors, actually, the warrior spirit is my ally if I can connect to it in people in the intelligence community or in the uniformed services. I try to, because that's how I can enlist them to help us get the truth out so we can really protect the country instead of serving these propagandistic, lying, cheating, dangerous people, psychopaths, by the way, who see nothing wrong in hurting others to get their objectives. Kevin Barrett wrote an essay on that recently that was quite good. But anyway, we need to corral those people. Go ahead.
But that is, it strikes me that is the, we have two different narratives. You have the ruler narrative, which is, it's for the good of all the people that you serve me and obey me.
Right, but they're just manipulating us.
My authority.
Right.
And then you have a different narrative which says, no, to protect us, you have to protect us from the rulers who are trying to kill us.
Right. We're trying to get the warriors to protect the people instead of just protect their employers. And that's been the dilemma for thousands of years, you know, for the professional soldiers. What do I do when the actual rulers with the paycheck are so corrupt they just offend everybody, and yet they're the ones, you know, they're the ones with the paycheck, and they're the ones we swear to help. Right.
Well, don't people in the armed services take oaths to defend the Constitution?
The United States of America, unique among nations, yes. And that really helps enormously. But America is rare in that, having the oath go to the Constitution. And we use that all the time when we're talking to our friends in the uniformed services.
Now, a friend of mine publishes books, and he published one about elite forces being ordered to assassinate a head of state, and they refused the job, and they were targeted for assassination.
Well, that might be, but I don't know about that last part. I've heard many allegations like that last part, what you just said, but most of those that I've heard have turned out to be false. Because let me tell you, you go target some elite killer type people, you're asking for big trouble. They don't do that. They do that when they really have to. The forces of evil. All right. But they don't do that rashly, because you don't be. Elite forces are very dangerous people, and you really don't want to be killing them unless you have to. Do you understand me?
I understand.
So who's this guy that's alleging that they took out a special forces team because they wouldn't cooperate?
No. He said that the elite forces then became targeted, but they were on Now this is what I wanted to ask you about is.
You know that is part of the special forces deal, is that special forces A teams can refuse mission.
That's what I thought.
Yes, they can say nope, we're not going to do that one because that one stinks.
Right.
You may not like this foreign leader, but we don't see him as deserving of execution.
Okay, but
good luck.
Maybe like these guys were on the ground, I think in Vietnam, and they were supposed to depose.
Well, there is a point, where you're supposed to follow through. Might have been.
And they didn't want to do that.
Well, good for them. Stand up to the bad boys once in a while.
Right. So.
And most often they will go along, actually, in the reality of troops in the field. Once they're in the field, mostly they will go along with the orders, but not every time.
Okay, we have
we'll
a
see
break.
You in a minute.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Call is out across the land, the impeachment of Bush. For crimes and lies, you'd like to see him kicked out on his push. Friends, you've got good reason. I support you absolutely. But this impeachment season, don't forget your civic duty. Impeach Cheney first. It can still get worse. After Bush's and cuffs, it's liable to get rough. Impeach Cheney first. Impeach Cheney first.
Hello. Welcome back to Questioning War, Organizing Resistance. That was Impeach Cheney First by Bill Oliver.
Do you get to pick all these music interludes, Carol?
Oh, yeah, you betcha.
I was wondering, because they're so apt for the topic.
I just wish I could fit them all in. There's some great music out there, and I need to get more new songs into the station, because that is what gives me heart. I mean, the fact that all these great artists and musicians are creating
that
these wonderful songs and pieces of art to help get our message across.
It should be an interesting struggle for human survival over the next 6 months. Good luck. I'm on your side.
It's heartening. But that's one of the things I have so many wonderful allies, and some of the allies are Veterans for Peace. And I think
I like
you
them
know
very much.
That a lot of people who leave the military are very outspoken against the military once they're out of it. But it's much harder to get the ones inside of it.
And it's going to stay that way, because it really, it is a brotherhood that endures, actually, even outside, and they want to protect each other too. So when they're inside, mostly they toe the line and don't criticize the commander in chief and obey the rules and all that stuff.
But with covert ops, you said that so many of them are botched, and I wonder how many times are they deliberately botched? Almost like I actually.
They're very hard to do, actually. They're botched mostly because they're very hard to do.
I had a friend, actually. I went to his memorial service yesterday. He sadly died of pancreatic cancer. He was 80 years old. His name was David Walt, and he was just an outstanding.
Oh, I'm very sorry to hear that.
Astounding, wonderful activist. But at the memorial service, which lasted 4 hours, people were talking about his life. They were saying how he very reluctantly was sort of forced into the military, and when he was shooting bullseyes, he was always getting the bullseyes, always getting the target right on the money. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they changed the image to a human being, he always missed. They punished him because he wouldn't actually shoot even at a silhouette of a human being. But if it was a bullseye,
well, if he was
no
80,
problem.
He was in ready. He was a World War II guy, so they would be rough with you. But, you know, they actually, there's been a lot of study, and they only shot, only about 15% of the soldiers in that war actually shot at the enemy, and 50% didn't fire their guns at all, and two-thirds of the rest shot up in the air and didn't aim at all at people. And they learned from that. General Marshall learned from that, and they conducted tons of research to increase the frequency at which the guys would shoot at the enemy. And there's a book written on this called On Killing by David Grossman. I'll spare you. But it's relevant to some of the subtopics we might discuss in training the population to support war instead of unearth the warmongers and work on solving global problems instead.
Yeah, I've read articles about that too, and they really it goes against the fiber and grain of humanity.
Right, and the average human will have a hard time doing that, but you can train most of them to do it if you work at it hard. By the way, the Vets for Peace, before we forget them, they're having their national convention this year in St. Paul, Minnesota, actually in Bloomington, but 4 days before the Republican National Convention. Just so many can stay over and trot over to join the festivities when the Republicans have their national convention in our fair city. Should be quite an interesting period of time.
Yeah, so folks head to Minnesota if you
can. There's a lot of them coming on September 1st. That's the first day. And things will open with a bang, with at least one big protest and a lot of pre-planned action by various people on all sides of issues. That's September 1. That's Labor Day. People are going to be busy that day. And then there's 3 more days, 1 through 4, a Republican convention. And the Vets for Peace are having their national convention through the 28th of August, so they can come on over and join us. So come by if you're bored here in California. But I'm sure you've got plenty of to do. You have the powerful people in the Democratic caucus. Aren't they your representatives to our Congress? Why aren't they doing anything meaningful to save the Republic anyway?
Well, there is some talk about impeaching Pelosi, and we do have Cindy Sheehan challenging her in the next election. And we are doing regular impeachment.
You know, Cindy's a marvelous person. Isn't she going to get crushed like a steamroller, going to roll over her? Isn't Pelosi unbeatable that way?
I don't know. I mean, the city of San Francisco has passed a resolution for impeachment. So I think things can change.
Okay, I don't want to be negative. I'm from Minnesota. We're skeptical out there in the snowdrifts. We hear about flowers blossoming in California, and we wonder.
But Pelosi, there are myths about her that she is this raving Californian liberal. It's not true at all. She's one of the wealthiest women in Congress, and she certainly has been very supportive of Bush and hasn't done much.
Well, she seemed to have been very supportive of Mr. Bush, and that's why part of what I was going to ask you, not that your program is on California politics, but
we do regular protests at her house.
At Pelosi's house.
Her office. Yes.
My goodness.
Yes. No, there's
okay.
there's a lot of opposition to her here, but I must admit that I have a tendency now to just see the opposition rather than the support from her, because those are the circles that I'm in.
Right, right.
The ones that are sort of in the know.
Well, good for you, and you're still all positive. How do you maintain your positive? Look, you've got a happy attitude in the face of these daunting problems. And you know as an activist that that's essential. How do you manage to do that? I mean, aren't these problems enough to just gag a maggot?
I think stopping watching television when I was 17
helped a lot.
Tremendously. I think that's the biggest tool of psychological warfare. And
actually, it is recognized as the most powerful instrument of psyops. You know that? The TV? You know that.
That's why I stopped.
Recognized in the industry of psychological operations. Yeah.
Right. Right. And it is ironic because we continually try to produce media.
Right.
They can have an antidote effect to the.
And they're going to digital TV.
No. But I mean, I became an activist after seeing the film JFK. So. I naturally tend to make films or try to get films made.
Well, I do. I've produced 57, by the way. Not all as evocative as the last one, but we at Ground Zero went to video in 1991 for that reason. It's a very powerful medium.
Right.
I don't prefer it for public education, but in the modern world, if you don't do video, you are going to forever miss a majority of your audience.
Right.
Will not read the paper.
But I think you have to do everything. I think you have to talk to people. You have to be in the
room. Do I have to do everything? I can't do everything. I'm too tired.
But I understand.
You're right. I'm just joking around. We have to do everything.
Actually, I know for me, I mean, I try to balance my life, and I know that one reason I can remain positive and happy is because I have seen movements grow, and I have been out there on the street, and that's what gives me hope. As well as this radio show is fantastic too. The stories that I hear, I mean,
group has spawned some very effective groups like that, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and other projects that you have spun off over the years have been very effective and impressive, and so you should be dwelling on those and feel affirmed and feel positive.
Well, there are wonderful stories, though, that I hear for the first time, like William Lewis. I had him on last week, and he told me that it was a 5-year-old girl that first told Jim Guest about Real ID. And I thought that was just amazing, because Jim Guest, he organized legislators in 34 states to stand up to the federal mandated
God bless
Real
democracy.
ID Act. And it was because of a 5-year-old girl who was...
Empower those citizens to go solve our problems. Sounds great.
But isn't that wonderful? I mean, just to think that, you know, any age, any sex...
It gives you
somebody
hope.
Somebody who has courage and smarts can
do it.
Can do it and have a huge effect, a fantastic ripple effect. I thank goodness to those three little old ladies.
Lighting the fires of liberty with your host, Michael Badnarik, from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central, Monday through Friday, only on We the People Radio Network.
Mr. President, I wish to document you have clearly lost your mind. Ever since the towers fell, you drove our soldiers straight through hell and left a trail of blood and tears behind. Mr. President, you were not heaven sent, and God's not standing by your side. Keeping track of all the dead, every hair on every victim's head. Their blood is on your hands, and you can't.
Hi, welcome back to Questioning War, Organizing Resistance. That's Tom Chelston from his album Brick. And I'm speaking with Michael Andregg. And Michael, getting back to your book on the causes of war, you talk about, you write about the biology of survival, economic and political consequences. And I think with your background in genetics and diseases, you must realize that in the wake of 9/11, this government has put a tremendous amount of resources into biological weapons, and I think this is one of the things that concerns me. I've got like 6 or 7 books on the subject. I still haven't been able to plow through all of them yet. But the bird flu scare, how desperate are these guys to release like biological weapons, and is there anything we can do to stop them?
The short answer is yes, we can do things to stop them from killing everybody with biological weapons. There are similar things to reining in the whole system. All right, but first I would say before you read those 7 books, if you want to scare your toenails off and just really horrify yourself, yes, if you know everything, if you learned everything there is to know about biological weapons, you can be totally and thoroughly horrified, okay? So you don't need to go learn every detail. Now, you know from me that it's horrible. But all that said, for 30-some years I've been tracking biological weapons. That were one, what we knew then, way back in 78 or so, is one of the reasons why I switched from genetics of disease to understanding causes of war. Because of what we knew about biological weapons then, and despite all of that horrible news, there have been hardly any deaths in the world due to biological weapons. So have no doubt that ordinary bombs and bullets are doing a perfectly good job of slaughtering hundreds of thousands of people every year. And that's a much more real and present danger than the biological weapons that are in labs. Now, back to 9/11 really fast, I want to focus on this detail. 1 week after 9/11, somebody delivered U.S. weapons-grade anthrax to the desk of Tom Daschle and other people in the U.S. Congress and in media. You remember?
Of course, and they got a bunch of money.
Very serious anomalies. Very serious. That's the second time in a week in the history of the Republic that we had a weapon of mass destruction used. The first time right here domestically, and yet it disappeared again from the major media spotlight, except for some anomalies. It hardly ever surfaced.
Because they traced it back to the U.S. military lab.
Well, that's one interpretation, and you're probably right. But we don't know for sure why. We just know it looked around. They focused on this Hatfill guy, Robert Hatfill, and hounded him for a long time, and he fought back with lawsuits. And now they don't say a thing, right?
Well, actually, they just gave him, like, a ton of money.
Right. They gave him a ton of money, right?
Yeah.
And have they said anything about who actually distributed this U.S. weapons grade heavy?
No.
But it was somebody in that lab,
right,
and probably a little ring of guys in that lab.
And the lab's got a ton of money, too, to continue their work.
And there's lots to worry about. Believe me, if you're the brightest people in genetics and recombinant DNA technology, decide to build a bug that can kill everybody, they can do it, all right? We could do it 30 years ago. They can do it now, and they can make the bug extra with extra sharp teeth and, you know, antibiotic resistant, and makes a cocktail of anthrax with smallpox and Ebola and 13 other horrible things. So if people are coping with 13 diseases at once instead of just one. They could make a nightmare of it and destroy the planet. Here's the bottom line, Carol. Human beings are now powerful enough, we can destroy the planet using weapons of mass destruction if we decide to. So we have to get a net around those people who are nuts enough to decide to destroy the planet in their arguments. And such people exist. They really do. So we have to go out there and Get the special weapons away from the nutcases. It's actually simple.
Okay, but these people gravitate to positions of power.
They do, and they like that secret power system. They love that environment, right?
Yeah, I still remember, I think it was one of the royalty in Britain who said, if I could come back in my next life, I would be a deadly virus.
Secrecy and fear, yes.
Yeah, they think it would be better if 90% of the population didn't exist, but of course, they could have all the goodies for themselves.
Right, that's a very Darwinian. There is a Darwinian way of looking at the world that has been with us forever, and I regret will likely be with us for this foreseeable future also. Right. But we shouldn't despair. We should just look at these as these are the grown-up problems that adults have to face in our modern world, or our civilization is going to go down the toilet. So I guess we have to face them, right?
Yes.
And
yes,
you're doing so with tranquility, and your family's still intact, so pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah. But I did want to see what you felt,
I feel that the weapons lab should be restrained, actually, if that's getting to the point of your question. But go ahead, ask away.
Okay. Well, in finding some sort of balance, how we can survive as a species, overcome these impulses to self-destruct.
Right.
In your concluding chapter, freedom is required, justice is desired. You look at
goodness, you actually read that whole book. I'm shocked. Go ahead.
Well, I figured I'd have you on the show. I could talk to you about this stuff because I mean it's interesting.
Well, I appreciate it. If we work 23 years writing a book, we'd love for somebody to read it. Thank you.
But it strikes me that, you know, what we need is, we've got these pathological people.
Right.
We need to contain them. And the hope is to have enlightened people who will restrain them. And to enlighten the people who are, have the power to do that.
Right.
And that is the biggest challenge because...
But the really gentle navel gazers don't go and hang out where spies hang out, right? So you have to convert some of the midway, sort of halfways gentle warrior sort of cactus people that do hang out with the spies. You have to get them warmed up to things like ethics for spies or ethics for warriors. You know, somebody developed those codes of honor for warriors to keep them from slaughtering the civilians or, you know, destroying the entire city, you know, in order to capture it, stuff like that. They developed that back in the Middle Ages, and there are versions appropriate to nuclear weapons and other modern military things. The laws of war, the laws against torture, all those things were developed by people trying to restrain the full expression of barbarism that people are capable of, right?
Yes.
And even though they've broken down, for the most part, people are offended by torture and say, oh, you guys are evil. You're not honorable rulers if you're rationalizing torture, right? Most of the world says that to Bush now and his cronies. So my point is pushing for standardized norms and ideas like human rights and torture conventions are part of the answers to this big problem also, boring though they may be. And I'm just encouraging everybody to work on the 100 different solutions to this problem and to recognize even though we have been set back by 9/11 and the war in Iraq and all these other things, it's a setback. It's not the end of civilization. And unless and until those bombs go off, or someone unleashes the bugs that can kill everybody, the issue's in doubt. So we're struggling to keep humankind alive and restrain those deadly weapons. Anything else we can talk about in the minute left?
No, we don't have a minute. That's it.
Okay.
Thank you for joining me.
I'll call you tomorrow
Okay, and thank you for your great book and your great film and all your work. It was a
thanks
pleasure
for sharing your audience. And I'll call you about coming to Oakland on Thursday for your group.
Okay, great.
All right, good luck to that. I plan on doing it. And anything else for now?
I just have to write up a description of the show if you want to do it for me.
A little report.
And cover everything we talked about in the last 2 hours.
I would say it just went well. I would say to your boss, write your own intelligence report. If you want the details, listen to my program.
Okay.
Yeah, I bet that's not good enough. But you take care, Carol. Thanks for the chance.